Joshua chapter 5, verse 9 through chapter 6, verse 1. And the Lord said to Joshua, "Today I have rolled away the reproach of Egypt from you." And so the name of that place is called Gilgal to this day. While the people of Israel were encamped at Gilgal, they kept the Passover on the 14th day of the month in the evening on the plains of Jericho. And the day after the Passover, on that very day, they ate of the produce of the land, unleavened cakes and parched grain. The manna ceased the day after they ate of the produce of the land. And there was no longer manna for the people of Israel. But they ate the fruit of the land of Canaan that year. When Joshua was by Jericho, he lifted up his eyes and looked, and behold, a man was standing before him with his drawn sword in his hand. And Joshua went to him and said to him, "Are you for us or for our adversaries?" And he said, "No, but I am the commander of the army of the Lord. Now I have come." And Joshua fell on his face to the earth and worshiped and said to him, "What does my Lord say to his servant?" And the commander of the Lord's army said to Joshua, "Take off your sandals from your feet, for the place where you are standing is holy." And Joshua did so. Now Jericho was shut up inside and outside because of the people of Israel. None went out and none came in. This is the word of the Lord. Thanks be to God. Please be seated.
Well, Happy New Year, and it's so good to be with you. This has been a very busy time of the year for me, which causes you to ask the question, how busy was it? Well, I did 5 Christmas Eve services over 3 days, and that was great. But it was so busy that it took me 3 weeks to finally get through It's a Wonderful Life. I always have to see that movie once a year. It took me so long to get through that by the time I finished, the part of George Bailey was being played by Matt Damon. I do have to bring up a concern I have, though, this morning, and I'm going to show you this concern. I was at Travis and Nina's home, and I saw a nice little manger scene in the front room, and I thought, how sweet is that, a beautiful little manger scene for the children. And then I got in a little closer, I became a little concerned, and then I got in real close, and I thought, now I am very, very concerned. How does Cinderella's cat end up in the manger scene? And this is theologically totally beyond the scope of my biblical analysis. So I'd like to immediately call a meeting, emergency meeting of the Board of Elders of the Williamsburg Community Chapel so we can deal with this issue between Travis and Nina and what they're teaching their children, our grandchildren. But I love to come to Williamsburg. There's so much to see and there's so much to do. And I usually end up at the cheese shop. And so I was at the cheese shop the other day and I saw this gentleman wearing this T-shirt. And I engaged him in conversation, and he said, "My wife gave it to me." Which brings me to this wonderful announcement. We are having a marriage retreat here in Williamsburg in March. I invite you all to be there, and we will be selling these T-shirts at the marriage retreat. Allow me to tell you a story. Joshua chapter 6. Now the gates of Jericho were securely barred because of the Israelites. No one went out and no one came in. I love those words. No one went out and no one came in. This is the definition of security. We've got it locked down. This is a very, very militaristic statement. It says, like, we are in control. Things are going to happen the way we want them to happen. You better watch out. No one goes out. No one comes in. This is how this story begins, or supposedly how it begins. Let me tell you a little bit about these walls. You all know the story of Jericho, and the walls came a-tumbling down. Well, these walls were amazing. They were surrounded. Jericho was built on a hill. It was surrounded by embankments. There was a 15-foot retaining wall. He's got a chart that's going to come up here, give you a little bit of a picture, like a pencil drawing picture of what that looked like. A 15-foot retaining wall, a mud brick wall that was 6 feet thick and 25 feet high. And beyond that, there was a 45-foot high wall. And so you can see the layers. This thing was imposing. To put this in perspective, I'm going to ask you all just to look up. This is a 37-foot ceiling. We'll call it 40 feet. Take another one of these buildings, put it on top of this building, and then look up and imagine what that looks like. And that's how you felt if you were standing at the foot of Jericho's walls. They were imposing. They were intimidating. This didn't look like anything that was going to fall down. This looked like it had been built for a great purpose. It was announcing, this is what worldly security looks like. This is it. You have arrived at a definition of worldly security. And so here we are, the walls of Jericho. And it seems like this is the story, but really, there's another part of the story that we're going to get to real soon. And the Lord said to Joshua, "See, I have given Jericho into your hand with its king and mighty men of valor. You shall march around the city. All the men of war are going around the city once. Thus shall you do for 6 days. 7 priests shall bear 7 trumpets of ram's horns before the ark. On the 7th day, you shall march around the city 7 times, and the priests shall blow the trumpets. And when they make a long blast on the ram's with the ram's horn, when you hear the sound of the trumpet, then all the people shall shout with a great shout, and the wall of the city will fall down flat, and the people shall go up, everyone straight before him." If you're Joshua, what do? You're looking up. This is massive. What is this all about? His leadership is on the line. The future is on the line. How does he even get to this place in his life? And they're going to blow trumpets? What kind of a military operation is this? So Joshua, the son of Nun, called the priests and said to them, "Take up the Ark of the Covenant and let 7 priests bear 7 trumpets of ram's horns before the Ark of the Lord." And he said to the people, "Go forward, march around the city, and let the armed men pass on before the Ark of the Lord." And just as Joshua had commanded the people, the 7 priests bearing the 7 trumpets of ram's horns before the Lord went forward blowing the trumpets with the Ark of the Covenant of the Lord following him. He saw Raiders of the Lost Ark. You know what that was looking like. The armed men were walking before the priests who were blowing the trumpets, and the rear guard was walking after the Ark while the trumpets blew continually. So lots of noise, lots of marching. But Joshua commanded the people, "You shall not shout or make your voice heard, neither shall any word go out of your mouth until the day I tell you to shout. Then you shall shout," which if you've ever been to a wedding, you've heard that song. Shout a little bit louder now, shout a little bit softer now. That's where it comes from, right here. So he caused the Ark of the Lord to circle the city, going about it once. And they came into the camp and spent the night in the camp. Okay, so now they marched around, they're blowing trumpets, they're all supposed to be quiet. Now they're camping. Imagine the stories around the campfire. Imagine those stories. Like, can you believe we're doing this? Do you see those walls? What are we going to do this? This is going to be a 6-day operation, 6 times, and then there's going to be this big shout. Can you even fathom what we're doing here? And how did we get here? Can you imagine what the women are saying? It's, you know, the men are talking about the operation, the military strategy and everything. The women are saying, "You're making so much noise, the baby can't sleep. You're making so much noise. Now the kids are all running around making believe that they have trumpets. It's driving me crazy. You know what it's like to stay at home all day with kids with trumpets and babies that are crying?" And so you have all this normal stuff going on in family life. Then Joshua rose early in the morning And the priests took up the ark of the Lord, and the seven priests bearing the seven trumpets of ram's horns before the ark of the Lord walked on, and they blew the trumpets continually. This would be like Travis and Rich and Doug coming up to your house and standing out front and just blowing trumpets. How scary is that? Would you be scared to have Travis and Rich and Doug blowing trumpets in front of your house? And the armed men were walking before them, and the rear guard was walking after the ark of the Lord while the trumpets blew continually. And the second day, they marched around the city once and returned to the camp. And then they told the same stories, and the women talked about all the noise. So they did for 6 days. How did they get here? We know this story, and we kind of know how the story ends. But do we really know how the story begins? Because it begins in a different way than you would ever imagine. The real story is in the prequel to the story in chapter 5. Just like Rogue One is this massive prequel that shows what happened to get you into the future. And I went to see it the other day. I have no idea anymore what Star Wars is about. I cannot figure it out to save my life. If some of you would like to see me afterwards and explain it to me, I'd be more than happy to see you. But a prequel is going to tell you this is what you really need to know. Well, chapter 5 is what you really need to know. And if you know what's in chapter 5, you will understand the Jericho story in a whole new way. Let's go to chapter 5. The beginning of chapter 5. You have the end of the 40 years of wandering in the wilderness. This is a big deal. Imagine 40 years, four decades, and you're just sort of meandering around and you're not really getting anywhere. As soon as all the kings of the Amorites who were beyond the Jordan to the west and all the kings of the Canaanites who were by the sea heard that the Lord had dried up the waters of the Jordan for the people of Israel until they had crossed over, their hearts melted and there was no longer any spirit in them because of the people of Israel. So the stories have gone far and wide and people are very, very concerned about what is happening. But they're secure. They've got the walls. They've got security emotionally, politically, and they think in many other ways. In verses 6 and 7, we're reminded of how they got here. For the people of Israel walked 40 years in the wilderness until all the nation, the men of war who came out of Egypt, perished because they did not obey the voice of the Lord. The Lord swore to them that he would not let them see the land that the Lord had sworn to their fathers to give us, a land flowing with milk and honey. So it was their children whom he raised up in their place. Joshua 5:9. Now we're on the cards if you want to be in the cards. Joshua 5:9 if you're in the ESV Bible. And the Lord said to Joshua, "Today I have rolled away the reproach of Egypt from you, and so the name of that place is called Gilgal to this day." Gilgal in Hebrew sounds like the word roll. Look at what it says. And the Lord said to Joshua, "Today I have rolled away the reproach of Egypt from you." That is over. That is done. We are moving on. I have this saying at Spring Branch. It's just three words. Here we go. It's whenever something new is happening, whenever something big is happening, I say, "Here we go." And I put it in text messages to my staff, and I say it to people all the time, "Here we go." And God is saying to Joshua, "Here we go. Here we go. Today, we're rolling this away, and everything is going to start in a whole new way." And so they name the place Roll, which is a very biblical thing to do. If you go to Genesis chapter 32, where Jacob is wrestling with the angel, you see that they name that place Peniel, which means the face of God. They name Israel, Jacob gets the name Israel, which means struggles with God or wrestles with God. And so there's this very literal thing of naming places and people after what is actually happening literally. So this reminds me of when Travis was 6 years old. And this was a time when once upon a time, everybody in the world was hoping and praying for a Cabbage Patch doll. And so Travis was hoping and praying for a Cabbage Patch doll, but they were tough to get. If you remember days of yore, Cabbage Patch dolls were very hard to get. And you'd have to kind of go with an armed escort to Toys R Us, and you'd kind of have to, you know, put on a mask, and you have to have ID, and you'd have to talk to a woman named Shirley, and you'd say, Shirley, did my cabbage patch doll arrive yet? And Shirley would say, nope. And then you'd go away for weeks and hope that Shirley would call you. So finally, one day, we get the call from Shirley, your cabbage patch doll is here. So we rush down to Toys R Us, and we sneak in there under cover of darkness, and we take this box, and we get it, we bring it home, and we give it to Travis. Here is this little cabbage patch doll. It's curly brown hair, jeans, adorable. Say, Travis, here's your cabbage patch doll. What are you going to name your doll, your cabbage patch doll? And Travis thinks about it for a minute. And then he announces to us, I'm going to name him Box. And we go, Travis, why in the world would you name him Box? I thought we were going to have to put him in counseling. Why would you name him Box? And he stood there, and he stood all, 3 foot, 2 inches high of his six-year-old life, and he said, I'm going to name him Box because he came in a box. And that was the moment I knew he was thinking biblically. It was very literal. Doll came in a box, got the name Box. This place is we're going to roll. We're going to name it Roll. The name of the place is Roll. While the people of Israel were encamped at Gilgal, which is Roll, they kept the Passover on the 14th day of the month in the evening on the plains of Jericho. So they're having this very intimate time, this very serious time. The 40 years are over. They're still remembering the Passover together just as they do to this very day. And the day after the Passover, on that very day, they ate of the produce of the land, unleavened cakes and parched grain. And the manna ceased the day after they ate of the produce of the land. And there was no longer any manna for the people of Israel, but they ate of the fruit of the land of Canaan that year. Manna was another one of those things that got a very literal name, because the first time it showed up, a couple of guys walked out and they looked at it, and one person said, what is it? And that became its name, manna, because that's what manna means. What is it? And so everything is changing. They're on a roll. Things are changing. And then there's this very significant part of the story. When Joshua was by Jericho. So now Joshua's by Jericho. What's Jericho look like? It looks like, look up and put another one of these buildings on top of this building. Look up. It's imposing. It's the world's definition of security. Joshua was taking this moment as a person who has to speak often and lead things often. I know what these moments are like. These moments are when you are just wanting to be alone to think and to pray and to get your bearings straight and to get your true north back in your mind and know exactly what God's called you to do. When Joshua was by Jericho, he lifted up his eyes and looked, and behold, a man was standing before him with his drawn sword in his hand. And Joshua went to him and said to him, are you for us or for our adversaries? Now, he wasn't really asking, like you might ask this afternoon, are you for the Giants or are you for the Redskins? It wasn't like a team thing. It was really the question, are you an Israelite or are you a Jerichoite, if that's a word? And the man said to him, no. But I am the commander of the army of the Lord. And so he's an angel. And often as God is about to do something big, he sends an angel as a messenger to bring the news that is so important to know and understand and to embrace. No, but I am the commander of the army of the Lord. Now I have come. And Joshua fell on his face to the earth and worshiped. Now let's stop right there for a second. And Joshua fell on his face to the earth and worshiped. This is an amazing moment of what true security looks like. And you see how God has sort of put these two views in place here in his word. Joshua 6:1. Got these huge, massive walls. Nobody comes in. Nobody goes out. This is what the world says is security. You go to the end here of Joshua chapter 5, God says, let me show you what real security looks like. It looks like a man on his face in total submission to God. Just wants to do God's will with all his heart. Just wants to hear from God. Just tell me, God, why I'm here. Tell me what you're going to do. Tell me how I'm a part of what you're doing. And when you have that attitude, you are smack in the middle of the most secure place on planet Earth. Don't ever be swayed with all these supposed posturings, these setups of what seems to be secure. You are most secure when you are on your face worshiping God. What does my Lord say to his servant? And the commander of the Lord's army said to Joshua, take off your sandals from your feet, for the place where you are standing is holy. And Joshua did so. This is what I want you to remember. I'm going to give you these three sets of words that you can hold on to and remember for all the days that are about to roll into 2017. Your role and your soul will always define your goal. Your role and your soul will always define your goal. Tim Keller, in his book, Making Sense of God, quotes Isaac Dinesen, author of Out of Africa, who wrote a rather pithy analysis of three kinds of people. Distilling her analysis, Keller states, there are these three types. One, people who look outward to their duty and role in the community to find out who they are. Two, people who look inward to define themselves by competition and shifting fashions of thought. Now, if you're the one person, the first kind of person, you're looking out and you're saying, well, I'm a part of this community, I'm a part of this group, and I can maybe figure out what I'm supposed to do, and that's who I am. Or you're part of the group that looks inward. But if you do that, things are always changing, things are always shifting. Fashions of thought and fashions of dress and fashions even of opinion are changing all the time. And so how do you end up knowing who you really are? There's a third kind of person, people who look upward to a personal God for mission and calling. This final group says, what matters is not what society says about me, nor what I think of myself, but what God thinks of me. These are role and soul people. These are role and soul people. So what type of person are you today on the cusp of 2017? Let me tell you about your role and your soul and your goal. There comes a time in your life to let God roll away the past and start something new. They got to this place and God said, I'm rolling away the past. Doesn't matter anymore. But what about doesn't matter anymore. But when he said, doesn't matter anymore, we are rolling on into a future that I am creating with you and for you and through you. Here we go. Here we go. We are rolling on. What do you need to let God roll away in your life today? What's the new life that God is going to allow you to live in 2017? Does it have to do with a relational issue? Does it have to do with a business issue? Does it have to do with something you've been struggling with for a long time? Does it have to do with finally letting go of that thing that has control over your life and you know you have to let it go? It's time to let it roll. God's saying, here we go, let it roll. Your ability to let God roll away the past will define your future. What do you need to roll beyond today? Let's talk about your soul. You can't face the future without deeply connecting with God today. This is more than going to church. It's more to being in a Bible study. You see it in Joshua as he worships God, as he goes face down in the presence of a message that's coming to him from God through this commander, angel. He goes face down. For Joshua, it meant really believing God was in his future every step of the way. Where in your life do you need to believe that God is with you every step of the way as you go into this new year? Every step. Doesn't matter. Everything. The thing that you think can't happen. Where do you need to get down and worship? Not go through the motions of the Christian faith, but really get into the inner workings of God, the Holy Spirit leading you, guiding you, shaping your life. Where can that happen? What's the thing that you're most afraid of? Maybe if you put it this way, what's the thing that you're most afraid of? And how can you see God stepping into your soul with you to get that thing moving? Your soul and your role are always going to define your goal. John Ortberg put it this way. We begin our lives regretting the wrong things we have done, but we end up regretting the open doors we never went through. He says, someday into your life will come a divine go. There was a study done of a number of people who were 95 years of age and older, and they were asked what they would do differently if they had life to live over again. They responded in three ways. We would reflect more. We would think more deeply about life than we did. We would peel back the layers of it. We would embrace it. We would squeeze it and understand what is really happening. Who are these people I am with? And what do we need to do and be together? We would reflect more. We would risk more. You know, God calls us into some things that are big and they're risky. And he does that so we will live out our faith. He's not trying to manipulate us. He's showing us, I will build the bridge. I will show up. I will always be with you. To us, it looks like a risk. To him, it looks like business as usual in God's kingdom. So where will you risk more, trusting that God will build the bridge between here and there if you will step out? We would have risked more. We would have reflected more. And then they said this, we would have done more things that would have lived on after we were gone. What's your legacy looking like? What do you want to be here when you're gone? Another way to put it is, what are you doing that's going to last forever? And some of those things that are going to last forever are right here. As you talk about the movement of God this year, God is in the movement business. He is the prime mover of all things. And he wants your goal to be about moving with him into these situations that are going to leave a legacy far beyond when you're not here anymore. And you want people to say, remember when he said this? Remember when she did that? And to have your story be part of an ongoing story of God accomplishing his will and his way in the world is the best gift that you can give to anyone. Your role and your soul will always define your goal. You see, role and soul people always have a God-led goal. It was 1862. Joseph Gilmore was about to preach a message at the First Baptist Church in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, on March the 26th, 1862. His biblical text was Psalm 23. The Lord is my shepherd, I shall not want. He leadeth me. And as he was preparing, he had used this psalm several times before, but on this occasion, he was struck by the words in a new way. He leadeth me. As Travis said earlier, they kind of jumped off the page. He leadeth me. And he said this, God's leadership is the one significant fact in human experience. It makes no difference how we are led or whither we are led, so long as we are sure God is leading us. March 26, 1862, and then he wrote this great hymn, "He Leadeth Me." He leadeth me, he leadeth me. By his own hand he leadeth me. His faithful follower I would be, for by his hand he leadeth me. Your role and your soul will define your God-led goal. Oliver Wendell Holmes, Sr., put it this way, again, in the context of this theme of movement, "I find the great thing in this world is not so much where we stand as in what direction we are moving. To reach the port of heaven, we must sail sometimes with the wind and sometimes against it, but we must sail and not drift nor lie at anchor." Rascal Flatts put it this way in a song titled "When the Sand Runs Out." "I spent the morning at an old friend's grave, flowers and amazing grace. He was a good man. He spent his whole life spinning his wheels, never knowing how the real thing feels. He never took a chance or took the time to dance. And I stood there thinking as I said goodbye, today is the first day of the rest of my life. I'm going to stop looking back and start moving on and learn how to face my fears. Love with all of my heart. Make my mark. I want to leave something here. Go out on a ledge without any net. That's what I'm going to be about. Yeah, I want to be running when the sand runs out." Henry Nouwen put it this way, very simply: "You don't think your way into a new kind of living. You live your way into a new kind of thinking." What's your role? What's your soul like right now? What's your God-led goal for 2017? Mark Batterson is a well-known Christian author. He pastors a church in Washington, D.C. But years ago, he attended the University of Chicago on a basketball scholarship. Wanted to play ball. He studied pre-law. Wanted to be a lawyer. But he eventually laid down those dreams when he felt called to the ministry. His call was sure. He had a dream of planting a church, but that dream had to die as his first church plant failed. He says this: "I look back on that failed church plant in Chicago. That was painful when it happened. It was embarrassing, to be honest, but God used that to prepare me for what he wanted to do. I have found most of the dreams God has given me have gone through a death and resurrection, and the purpose is so the ego will die in the process so God can get the glory." He also cautions leaders to remember the dreams God gives us aren't so we can attain lofty positions or be known for grand accomplishments. "The purpose of a dream," Batterson writes, "is not just to accomplish that dream. It's about who you become in the process. God is able to do big things through you, but it starts with what God wants to do in you. He always does something in us before he does something through us." Your role and your soul will always define your God-led goal. So what place do you need to call role in this new year? Batterson puts it this way about his role and his soul and his God-led goals: "Quit living as if the purpose of life is to arrive safely at death." Do you know how many people are doing that? Just trying to make it smooth and clear all the way out? Quit that. Set God-sized goals. Pursue God-ordained passions. Go after a dream that is destined to fail without divine intervention. Don't let fear dictate your decisions. Don't take the easy way out. Don't maintain the status quo. So often, that's what we end up backing into in church life and ministry. We try to play it safe. We maintain the status quo. And God says, no, we got to move. I'm moving. I'm the grand mover. Let's move together. Stop pointing out problems and become part of the solution. I don't know if it's here like it is at Spring Branch and in Virginia Beach, but some people in my church have the spiritual gift of pointing out problems. Stop repeating the past and start creating the future. Stop playing not to lose and start playing to win. Take off your sandals. Then the Lord said to Joshua, today I have rolled away the reproach of Egypt from you. Here we go. That's all in the past now. So that place has been called Roll to this day. Take off your sandals, for the place where you're standing is holy. And Joshua did so. You have a card, and this card says, what place do you need to call roll? Keep this card. Put it somewhere. Put it in a drawer, put it on a bulletin board, keep it at your desk. But think about it, because your role and your soul will always define your God-led goal. Will those who are serving communion today, please come forward.